from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattada! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point, Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine joined alongside Ben Shulman. Switching things up, we're 2 weeks away from Syracuse basketball, so let's throw Syracuse football on the back burner or maybe in the trash, whatever you prefer. Get them off the docket for a little bit. Let's talk some basketball because there's a lot of optimism around this team this year and, you know, a lot of questions to be answered with this team. So we were fortunate enough to catch up with Mike Waters earlier today to give some of those insights. And Ben, we've got the schedule just released earlier this week and just earlier today, some new news that we will get a Syracuse-Georgetown matchup this year. So some fun stuff to look forward to and to start to dive into with the Syracuse basketball team.
I mean, it's already a shame that Syracuse and Georgetown don't play twice a year anymore. So to at least get that one game, obviously, there won't be fans, but for us personally, it's cool that the game is happening in Syracuse. That should be great. SU Georgetown, it's not just a staple of the old Big East or these two programs. It's a staple of college basketball. I think it's a rivalry that a lot of fans of the last, you know, 20, 40, 50 years look back on. And it'll be a lot of fun to see that game. It's great to get a schedule, as we'll talk about a bit later in this episode. There's some surprises within the schedule. But it looks to be one that Syracuse can succeed in. There are tough games. There's a stretch near the end of the year where Louisville, Duke, and North Carolina, 3 and 5 games, you face those tough opponents. That's tough. But there's opportunities for the SU basketball team to bounce back off of what I think everyone can agree was a bit of a transitional year last season.
Yeah, and, you know, the good thing about that SU-Georgetown game is you start to see out of some of the younger fans, out of some of the new students who didn't grow up following Syracuse basketball, you've got that emphasis on the SU-Duke game, that sort of one-sided rivalry that has made its way throughout Syracuse. You've got to keep playing Georgetown to reestablish and reinforce that this is the rivalry. This is where the history is. And as you mentioned, this is where, you know, NCAA basketball fans, college basketball fans as a whole, know the Syracuse-Georgetown games are always a good, always physical, always a lot of history there. When you've got a guy like Jerry McNamara, Jim Boeheim, Buddy Boeheim on that bench for Syracuse, you know that there is a lot of hatred and a lot of futility towards the Hoyas. So always excited to see that. But it's fun to be able to start looking into a full ACC schedule, a lot of games to kind of look in. And I think Syracuse has a reasonable draw in terms of their home and homes and being able to avoid home and homes with, you know, the majority of the top five of the ACC, all of whom are very tough, talented teams, all of whom got first place votes in the ACC preseason polls. So they were pretty fortunate in that regard. But as you mentioned, there is a tough stretch down the end of the season that Syracuse closes the season out. I think their last three games have a matchup with UNC and a matchup with Duke, which will be a very difficult stretch to round things out.
Yeah, the home and homes, they didn't go great. They didn't go terribly if you're on the Syracuse side. You do play a home and home against North Carolina, which after last season's blunder is a bit of an unknown quantity. And you have a home and home against Louisville. Those are two of the lower teams of the ranked teams for the ACC. So that's good. And then I think for SU, some may look at this as a negative. I think it's a positive. A home and home with NC State and a home and home with Clemson, those are two teams that you're going to be fighting with for that 6-7 spot. SU was ranked the sixth team in the preseason ACC media poll, as you mentioned. And if SU wants to win games, they got to beat those teams, and they'll have the opportunity to do so. These tiebreakers could be big here, as teams don't play the same number of games. If there's cancellations or postponements, those head-to-head matchups could be huge for the Orange.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun kind of speaking through the schedule a little bit, but this is Syracuse basketball time. We are inching so close, and we've got a very special guest this week. We caught up earlier today with Mike Waters, the beat reporter for Syracuse basketball for Syracuse.com. He is a staple of Central New York. We were very lucky to have caught up with him and get his insight just a little bit ago. There are three staples in my life growing up in Central New York. You've got snow at any time of the year, a line at Hyde's anytime the weather is over 60 degrees, and Mike Waters covering Syracuse basketball. We've now got the honor of having Mike on the podcast for the first time. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
I don't know if I feel honored or old, but thank you. I'm up there with Hyde's. That's cool. Hyde's is all right.
Awesome. We're glad to have you on. Mike Waters, obviously covering Syracuse basketball for Syracuse.com, has been doing so for 30 or so years. And Mike, it's been a crazy time lately with your coverage of Syracuse basketball. What is, you know, the biggest adaptation you've had to make over the last, you know, 7 or 8 months to continue to put out the coverage that you do?
Adjusting to not in person, you know, not having the ability to do interviews in person. You know, you could only do so much off of Zoom. Zoom's great. Wish I had stock in it at this point, but it's a far cry from being there and talking to somebody in person. And now at this point in the season, not being able to go and watch a practice and grab a player or a coach in person for just not even a formal interview. You know, hey, how you doing? You know, how's your mom and dad? How are classes? You know, maybe ask the coach, you know, what do you think of this player, or how's that freshman look? And you can still do what you can, but that's the hardest part. And it's just not being there and, you know, developing a little bit more of a relationship with the players and a rapport with them, so that when you do end up with that sit down formal interview, there's a little bit more of a, you know, trust with between each other. And, you know, some of the Zoom interviews right now, you know, the players don't know you, and they don't know all the other people in the Zoom chat. And you can tell the quality of the quotes and the answers, it starts to go down.
What have you heard about coverage of this upcoming season? You know, we're about 2 weeks away. Is there anything that's been said about stadium access or anything in that realm?
It looks like for home games, it's going to be much like we've been experiencing for football. You know, reporters will be there. You know, we'll probably be somewhere close to the court. You know, they don't want us too close because there's not going to be any fans there, you know, so they could move a row of tables 10 feet from court side if they wanted. So you'll be able to do that. Post-game interviews, though, we won't be. There'll be no locker room access. It's not like they're going to bring players out to an interview room. We'll be doing those on Zoom, much like football has. And again, that's not what we want as reporters. It's not desirable. It's not the greatest, but you understand what's going on around, you know, in real life right now. So you understand the university's desire to keep the players as safe and as healthy as possible. So you work with it. As far as going on the road games, boy, there's a lot of factors going on there. You know, the New York State's travel guidelines and restrictions. Is it worth it to even go on the road to a game if the post-game interviews are also on Zoom? So, you know, you could do them as well, you know, from here in Central New York as you can up in the stands at the Smith Center in Chapel Hill. I mean, you know, there is an element to being able to see the game beyond just the court, which you can do in person. You know, you can move your vision, you can go from the court to the coach's sidelines. You know, you don't have to be beholden to just the TV cameras. You know, you might be able to hear some things with no fans in the stands, you know, and that might add, you know, to some of the color and the depth of our coverage is what can we hear? But, you know, we'll see. We're going to play that the travel by ear because, you know, in addition to wanting to be there and cover games and get interviews, I've got some bosses that have, you know, come out and said, listen, you know, I know you want to go, but we have to also be concerned about your health and welfare. And it's kind of like, you know, they might have to take the car keys from me to keep me from going the same way the trainers on football have to take a helmet away from a running back who just got hit.
Exactly.
I want to play. I want to keep playing. I want to go. But if my boss doesn't take away the car keys, I think my wife might.
We expect nothing else from you, Mike. You've always been able to get that access, and it's such a different approach and something we keep adapting to every week now. I know I took the trip down to Clemson for Syracuse football coverage, and that was a logistical nightmare with New York State and the university and all that. So I can tell you firsthand, there are a lot of repercussions to going down and making those decisions because of, you know, people above your boss, and you go up to Cuomo and all that. So there are a lot more people with their hand in the decision here. So it's definitely an interesting decision, but we've got, you know, brand new news with Syracuse basketball. We just got the schedule, the ACC schedule announced earlier this week. What are your biggest takeaways from that schedule as you've started to, you know, look into it a little bit?
I was surprised that the ACC put together a schedule that looked like the same one they had last year. You know, there was absolutely no nod towards a pandemic raging across the country. You know, other leagues have created mini conferences where the same three or four schools are going to play more games against each other, and they're the same region, you know, geographical region, so they're going to reduce some travel there. You know, the Patriot League, the Metro Atlantic. I know they're smaller leagues, but still. Is it only the bigger leagues with the bigger money that don't care about the coronavirus? And ostensibly, the schools in the ACC and leagues like that, well, they got more money for travel. So why is it a hardship to have Syracuse go down to North Carolina and play Carolina on a Monday, Carolina on a Saturday, Duke on a Monday, and then come home? And at the same time, Boston College goes down and they play Duke on that Saturday, Carolina on that Monday, and then they come home. They didn't do that. Miami and Florida State both play at Syracuse this year. And why the ACC didn't have Syracuse play Miami on a Saturday and Florida State play BC on that same day, and then on Monday, the two Florida-based schools switch and Florida State comes to Syracuse. They didn't do that. You know, so they didn't create travel partners. They didn't create pods. You know, Syracuse is going to play all four teams in the state of North Carolina this year, and none of the trips line up. So that you could play two of them on just one trip. They didn't do that. They didn't pad the schedule with an open week. Some conferences are doing that to maybe have some makeup games. I think the ACC just decided better just to have the schedule play through, and rather than have an open week, because you don't know exactly when a COVID outbreak will occur. What if the COVID outbreaks, you know, happens during the open week you created, and then you're all just sitting around anyway? Maybe you needed, you know, play in the weeks when you got everybody. I think they're perfectly fine if it comes down at the end of the season and out of a 20 game conference schedule, if Duke has played 18 games and Syracuse has played 15 and, you know, Virginia's gotten lucky and played 20, they'll figure out the standings and the seedings for the tournament. But yeah, they elected not to do that. So I was a little confused by that. Other than that, I'm sure you asked the question more in part and like, oh, who has a tough stretch and who has this and that? You know, Syracuse doesn't have any more than two home games in a row. They don't have any more than two road games in a row. So they don't have one of those dreaded three straight road game stretches that are bad. You know, the one thing that stood out to me was Syracuse only has three Saturday home games in the conference. And normally Syracuse administrators would be crying foul and Syracuse fans would be upset because, you know, up here in Syracuse, weekend home games are a big deal. People come from a long way away in bad weather to attend games. And it's also a working class city. It's a blue collar town for the most part. And so you don't take your kid to the Tuesday game that tips off at 8. You know, you don't take your kid to the Wednesday game that tips off at 9. fans load up on those weekend games, and they really love it if it's a Duke or North Carolina. And that's when you get your 30,000 plus crowds. And that's when Syracuse wins the attendance crown nationally. Well, with only three Saturday games, it's, you know, normally that would be awful. But this year, if no fans are in the stands, it really doesn't matter. I mean, who knows what day of the week it is anyway. If This Is Us is on, I know it's a Tuesday. Other than that, I got no clue. And so I think if you're a fan, you're like, okay, if the game's on a Saturday or Tuesday or whatever, I'll tune in. But you can't go, so it's not like Syracuse is going to be losing any attendance. We'll see. But, yeah, that stood out because normally that would be a horrendous thing for Syracuse.
Yeah, the lack of changes from this schedule to last year's schedule was really shocking. I will say, akin to the bye week comment, they do have the season ending 6 days earlier this year. So perhaps that's a look at maybe just leaving an extra week to push things back. But it'll be interesting to see with how everything's working so far in college football and the NFL with lots of games canceled and postponements. Looking from the competition standpoint, Syracuse, they get Louisville twice. They get North Carolina twice, two preseason ranked teams. I can't believe I'm asking this, but is North Carolina North Carolina? You know, after the shocking season last year, I don't know if Syracuse fans should be looking at UNC as the giant that they have for so many decades.
Well, obviously, North Carolina's got some work to do. Last season was a bad year for Roy Williams and the guys in Powder Blue. But, you know, a lot of that was the team just wasn't quite – they didn't mesh quite right. They only had Cole Anthony healthy for about 9 or 10 of those games. You know, he was an elite talent. They still struggled sometimes when he was out there. So they've got some guys coming back who I think are really good players. Garrison Brooks, preseason player of the year in the ACC. So he's good. He's also a known quantity, and he may not end up being the player of the year of the league. You know, because a lot of times the writers don't want to vote for a freshman that many of them haven't seen, or you definitely haven't seen him at the college level. So sometimes you don't vote for that Duke freshman. But, you know, there will be some of those guys. But Garrison's a known quantity. Even if he doesn't end up being player of the year, you can pretty much pencil him in for a really good season. And they got Armando Bacot back. They got Leaky Black back. You know, so they got some guys. And they've brought in an incredible recruiting class. I think Roy and the Tar Heels have a much better year this year. I think I only had them like fourth or fifth in the league. And I know Carolina's usually up there at one or two. So they're not quite the same. Listen, they're not going to be anywhere near as bad as they were last year. Not unless Garrison Brooks or somebody the equivalent of a Cole Anthony ends up missing about 20 games.
I've seen some preseason ACC rankings just because you mentioned North Carolina there around five. And I've seen Syracuse in the six range, which puts them just below all the preseason ranked teams of the ACC. Do you see them as kind of a best of the rest or potentially, you know, on the brink here of moving up into that upper echelon of the ACC?
Well, for this year, best of the rest would be pretty darn good with those five teams that were ranked ahead of Syracuse in the ACC media poll. You know, they all five received first place votes. So there's some writer somewhere in the ACC that thinks even the fifth place team could finish first. So you get beyond that, you know, if you're sixth, you're in good shape. You're probably, you're not anywhere near the NCAA bubble. You're firmly in the tournament. You're toying with the top 25 at certain times during the year, probably right on the edge of the top 25. And for a Syracuse team that didn't have a player on the first, second, or third team all-conference preseason, you know, nobody's getting any kind of, you know, love or respect out there off this roster. But I actually do think this is an underrated Syracuse team. I think they have the ability. I picked them to finish sixth. I think they can finish there. But that's going to be a tough task because there's a few other teams like Clemson, Georgia Tech, North Carolina State, who also see themselves right there in that range. And you know, depending on how the schedule goes, if your only game against, you know, Clemson's at Little John, well, you're going to be down one because the Tigers are tough down there. But if you get North Carolina State here, you know, just state travel, we'll see. You know, that unbalanced schedule could play a factor there. But I actually think people are underrating Syracuse just a little bit based on the fact they don't have an All-American. You know, they don't have a returning all-conference player. They don't have a top 25 recruit coming in to get everybody excited like Scotty Barnes down at Florida State. But that said, you start to look at this roster and you're like, an experienced front court with Marek Dolezal and Barama Sidibe, you know, at forward and center, seniors. How many other teams have seniors? You know, two of them starting up there. The backcourt of Buddy Boeheim and Joe Girard comes back. Both, you know, Buddy started all 32 games. Joe started 30. You know, Buddy did score 15 points a game in this league last year. That's not for nothing, you know? And, you know, everyone focuses on the loss of Elijah Hughes. But I think with an improved and healthy Quincy Guerrier and the incoming transfer, Alan Griffin from Illinois, I think Syracuse has a couple guys, you know, who can fill in there and make up for Elijah. And coaches always like to say, well, you don't replace an Elijah Hughes with one player. Syracuse doesn't have to. You know, it doesn't have to be just Alan Griffin. It doesn't have to be just Quincy. And you expect Barama to play better than he did over the whole arc of last season. You look at those last 6 to 10 games that Barama played. Holy cow. He was fantastic. You know, the last six games of the year, he had 10 or more rebounds in each game. Well, that hadn't been done by a Syracuse player in about 9 years. I mean, Joaquin Christmas as a senior didn't do that. Barama did. Barama. I mean, come on. I mean, Joaquin Christmas was the senior, you know, bell cow in 2015. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is a team with some guys who I think have experience. They know how to play. They know their roles. And, you know, I think it all comes down to, you know, how good is Alan Griffin really? How much better can Quincy be when he's healthy? Because we found out last year he wasn't. You know, he had the torn groin muscles. He had to have off-season surgery. So, you know, and that gives you six power guys. And, you know, people always worry, like, you know, Boeheim doesn't play bench. Listen, those 7, 8, 9 guys, he'll figure those out. And he'll get enough out of a Kadari Richmond. He'll get enough out of a Robert Braswell. And he'll find one of those young centers to back up Barama. And they'll be fine.
I wanted to talk about those centers a little bit now that you kind of leave us right there. Where is the rest of the minutes outside of Sidibe? Because you've got, you know, John Bolajak, Frank and Salem, Jesse Edwards. Where are the rest of the minutes? And is this, you know, in turn because of that, a year that you might see Anselm put on a red shirt?
Okay. Right off the top, I don't think we see red shirts this year.
Okay.
Maybe you could, but with the NCAA giving every winter sports athlete an extra year of eligibility.
True.
Why redshirt? You might as well just, you know, see, you know, and who knows. You know, again, I wish I'd been able to see a few practices, and I feel like I could give you a better scouting report on Jesse and John Ball and Frank. You know, the coaches that I talked to, the assistants, they seem pleased with the progress that Jesse's made. They seem excited about the athleticism and bounce that Frank has, and they really see him as a guy who, even if he doesn't help a lot this year, that down the road could be a big factor. His offense has a ways to go, but that's okay. You know, not many teams ask their backup center to come in and score a ton of points. You ask your backup center to come in and rebound the basketball and be a presence on defense. And from what I'm hearing, young Frank can do that. He's very springy. He's long. He's a shot blocker. So we'll see. That'll be interesting to see who does become that first center off the bench. But here's another name to throw at you. Marek Dolezal.
Yes.
You know, if the young centers aren't ready, or if it's a situation where maybe you do want, you know, Barama has to come out, but you want to stay strong or at least versatile offensively, Marek Dolezal remains the break glass in case of emergency center. And he has been that guy for like the last 2 years. Each of the last couple of years, Jim Boeheim has told me flat out, I know for a fact he said this last year, Marek's not going to play much center. And of course we know Marek did. You know, he's now Marek's bigger. He's added weight in the offseason. For really the first time in his career, he was able to add about 15, 20 pounds. And he was never really a guy who, you know, relied on strength anyway, but a little stronger with some more confidence. So, you know, let's say one of the young centers does become the primary backup, but let's say that young center gets hurt or is in foul trouble in a game, you don't have to go to your third string center. You go to your starting power forward in Marek, and you put Quincy at one forward and Alan Griffin at the other, and that's a pretty strong lineup, right?
for sure.
Yeah, I think in the small ball era, especially with how many threes that Syracuse wants to shoot now, it almost makes sense to sometimes go to that lineup, regardless of who the backup center is, because, you know, four capable three-point shooters on the court, if Quincy shoots threes this year, is something that I don't think a ton of teams know how to defend. Talking about Quincy and Alan Griffin, I think a lot of people have penciled in Griffin as the go-to. He's the three. He's going to play the minutes and start. And this could be my Canadian bias, but I'm still pretty high on Quincy and feel like he might have a shot here to be the starting three, or at least split minutes pretty heavy at the small forward, power forward spot. What do you feel is Quincy's role this year?
Well, it's just a guess. Again, you know, I'm only going off what, you know, maybe a couple of the assistant coaches might have said to me in a couple conversations, and believe me, they're not telling me who's starting. But, you know, reading between the lines and what I mean, I just see Alan Griffin as a starter because he kind of fits the Elijah mold, where he can shoot threes, and with Buddy and Joe and a third guy, you force the opposing defense to really spread out. You're going to stretch them, and you want to make them do that at the beginning of a game. If Quincy isn't the shooter that Allen is, even if Quincy's better from three-point range, he's not the shooter Allen. I mean, Allen made 41% of his threes at Illinois last year. Mm-hmm. I think Quincy was about 3 of 24 at Syracuse. So, you know, a little quick math from my baseball days, that's the same as 1 for 8 from the plate. And you're a 125 hitter. So not that I was a 125 hitter in high school. I was slightly above that, but not much. But I know what 1 for 8 is. It is 125. So, but I think Allen fits that mold. And then I think Quincy becomes your Swiss Army knife off the bench. He can come in at the 3. He can come in at the 4 for Marek. Marek can sit down. He can come in at the 4 and Marek can move to the 5. Because, again, I think Quincy can shoot. I agree with you. I see him adding to his game this year. I saw him shoot well in practice last year. It just didn't translate to the game. That's common for a freshman that hasn't shot defended threes before and had college guys in their face as they shot their threes, like in high school when they shot them when they were open. You know, even a bad three-point shooter like Quincy doesn't get open for threes, right? You know, no one leaves you open. So, you know, I think he adds to his offensive game, but here's the thing. So he comes in at the 4, and maybe he's not quite the offensive, you know, threat from the perimeter. But Marek now is being guarded by a 5. I know Marek didn't make a lot of threes last year, but the year before he made a few. He can shoot as well. And I think he becomes an even more dangerous shooter if he's either at the very top of the key or at the corner, spotting up, because the other team's starting center, most big guys, even if they know that their man is a threat, their whole lives they've defended in the paint. And it's really, really, you know, they're reluctant to get all the way out there 18 feet from the basket. It's not where they're supposed to be. So, you know, Marek could find himself, you know, open for threes in a lineup that has Quincy at the 4, Marek at the 5. But going back to Quincy, you know, last year, even hurt, even struggling a little bit with his outside shot, he played 20 minutes a game. And he was a fantastic rebounder. And rebounding wasn't last year's strong suit for the team. So I think they're going to need him out there rebounding-wise. I think he becomes a better offensive player and healthy. I just think even if he's in the same role, I think he's going to be so much better in that role. And maybe instead of 20 minutes a game, maybe he's up around 24, 25.
When you look at the other two freshmen, we talked on Frank a little bit, but when you talk about Kadari Richmond and Woody Newton, you hear the hype about Kadari right now, but it seems like Woody might be a guy that just kind of gets lost this year when you look at the abundance of strong forwards and centers on this team. Where do you kind of see the both of them fitting into this team this year to kind of keep you on the guessing game train here?
Well, we even had a Zoom call yesterday with Jim Boeheim. And in that Zoom call, just like in every other conversation I've had with him or one of the assistants this fall, Kadari Richmond's name comes up. They're really, they're happy with this kid. They like him. And Jim sees him as a point guard, even though he's 6'5". And sometimes people try to tell me he's 6'6". I think he's probably 6'5", might be closer. But, Jim said that, he went to see him once last year playing high school, and he was at small forward and hardly had the ball and wasn't all that, they're watching him. They know he's a good player. But he said he's a point guard. He's not a small forward, and he's so much better at point guard. They like his size, his athleticism, his ability to come off the pick and roll and go downhill and get in the lane, go to the basket. At 6'5", you figure he's going to be a good finisher. So they like it. Now, hey, listen, he's got Joe and Buddy in front of him. But the cool thing about having a 6'5" backup point guard is that he can come in for your point guard, or he can come in for your two guard. Kadari could come in for Buddy, and Joe slides off the ball. And Joe is a shooter. You can run your offense. It doesn't matter who the taller guy is on offense. And then in the zone, Kadari is almost the same height as Buddy. So defensively, he and Joe look a lot like Buddy and Joe. So, Kadari is basically your backup at both positions, even though I think he primarily plays the point. When he comes in for Buddy, it'll be Joe that moves over to the shooting guard, which could be great for Joe, relieve him of a little bit of ball handling duties, and maybe allow him to run off a few screens and catch the pass and shoot coming off a nice screen. He hardly ever got to do that last year because he was running the point the whole time. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Woody Newton. It's going to be really hard for a freshman, forward. I've heard, first of all, good things about Woody. They like him. They think he's, really actually in recent practices over the last 2-3 weeks, I'm hearing that Woody is really coming on, that early on in the fall, it was the adjustment. He was having to make that big adjustment to the college game, but he's got Quincy, he's got Marek, he's got Alan Griffin, three, veteran guys, at the two forward spots that are ahead of him. So, he and Robert Braswell will be battling, for some minutes off the bench. And, Robert, we know, can shoot the three really well, which is an asset for him. But we also know Robert, had the shin problems last year. So we'll have to see if he's fully healthy. But I know Woody is a player that they really like as they look to the future, because they'll lose Marek after this year. Allen's already a junior, and then Woody's ahead of him. But Woody and Quincy are so dissimilar that I just see they would end up playing together. I don't know if they back up each other up. We'll see. That's way down the line though.
It's crazy. I mean, technically Marek is done this year, although he could come back. As True. Could Marama if he wants to, but moving back to
Kadari. I don't know that they will, and I know you got another question there, but let me. They could, but as two international guys, and Marek has played here a lot. He played even as a freshman, so he's gotten a lot of playing time in college. And as a foreign player, he's not an NBA guy. But as a foreign-born guy, he's going to have a lot of interest in him from, teams overseas, because there's, some teams still have a limit on how many American, born players or American citizens that they can have on their team. So same thing with Burama, as a foreign-born guy. Now, Burama might be a little different because he's had a career that's been curtailed by injuries. Last year was really his first year where he got to play and play pain-free. So – he would look into it. And I think also, I got to get a chance to talk to these guys. Do they have any interest in pursuing a master's degree or something else? Is how important is that to them? So we'll see. Probably neither one's going to make a decision until the end of this year.
So kind of on that track, the football season was defined in a way by the guys who weren't there, not the guys who were there, with so many opt-outs and, of course, some debilitating injuries to the team. Has there been any word that you've heard on anyone potentially not being totally into playing during COVID, or does it seem like the full roster will be there?
I haven't heard a thing about any player opting out. And I think what players and coaches and administrators are all learning, it doesn't look like the virus is spread through athletic activity, or at least not as much as they feared prior to the start of football season. It seems like, and I say seems because, man, I'm not an epidemiologist. I'm not even a you know, someone who's really covered the virus that much, but it seems like that the spread comes from other things like social gatherings, travel, you know, so travel's a concern, you know, and just like, you know, like there's probably more concern from the players spreading it amongst themselves if they were in the locker room together at one time, you know, or hanging out in the lounge, which they're not allowed to do, by the way, and they're not, then they do playing against each other on the court. Now, it was interesting. I talked to the team physician down at the University of Florida, who's on the NCAA's medical advisory board for the coronavirus. His name's Dr. James Clugston. And he said that he considered basketball a higher risk activity than football, which was interesting. That he pointed out a smaller playing surface field, you know, basketball, the court's much smaller than a football field. So the football players, except for maybe the offensive linemen, they spread out. And they don't spend as much time actually in contact with each other as basketball players do. You know, think about the times you've played pickup basketball. You've got your man, right? You guard him on one end, he guards you on the other, and you're in close proximity with each other. You know, you have to shadow him all over the floor. Doesn't happen as much at football. So they really haven't seen the spread of the virus in football. I think that's made reassure some people heading into basketball, but it is definitely something to keep an eye on because basketball may not be the same as football, but so far I haven't heard anything about any opt-outs. And I can't even think of too many opt-outs I've heard even across the country in terms of basketball. Whereas in football, you heard a lot of those early on and, you know, we'll see. I would imagine if it gets to that point, we're probably going to see some cancellations and shutdowns because the virus is spiking before we see too many player opt-outs.
All right. I want to play a little game here. We'll go put you in the hot seat. We'll go a little rapid fire here. Just quick answers, one sentence at the most. Just kind of go through, you know, some of these pressing ideas in terms of Syracuse basketball and the season as a whole. First and foremost, you see Elijah Hughes kind of on the brink right now, that first round, second round. Where do you see him falling?
Probably early second round. There's been a little bit of buzz created by him, but I don't think this is the year where you see players improve their stock in because you haven't been able to have the same series of workouts with teams leading up to the draft and stuff like that. So I think you almost go back to almost exactly where players were slotted, you know, back at the end of the college season and back when the draft was supposed to take place. So I'm going to stick with Elijah right there near the beginning of the second round. But, you know, who knows? All it takes is one team at the end of the first that likes him and maybe does know him a little bit and has seen him. And, you know, we get surprised by, you know, somebody taking him at the end of the first round. But either way, you know, he's going to be fine. You know, he'll be able to go to camp with a team that he knows wants him. Because even if you're taking somebody with a high second round pick, you know, that's the high second round pick has value. So you're not just throwing it away on a guy. So he'll go into camp, hopefully in a good position to make a roster.
There are no Syracuse players on the preseason first or second team all ACCs. Do you see someone making that jump at the end of the season? Is there anyone that can make a first or second all ACC team or even an honorable mention or a third or fourth on that list as well?
The two guys I would definitely keep an eye on would be Buddy and Alan Griffin. Buddy, because, you know, if he can score 15 points again, you know, per game, you know, and lead the league in made threes, you know, I think he's going to be at least second or third team all ACC. And I put Alan in there because, you know, if he takes his averages from Illinois, where he had like 8.9 points and 5 rebounds a game in just 18 minutes. And if he really is the starting small forward and plays well, you know he's going to play about 35, 36 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. Well, now you're talking about, you know, if he doubles those averages, even if he doesn't double them, because 10 rebounds would be ridiculous for a 6'5" guy. But, you know, we'll see. You know, Alan Griffin could end up being the leading scorer on a team that finishes, you know, sixth in the league or something. And that's the other thing, too. It all depends really on how well Syracuse plays. Because for the most part, individual accolades are based on team success. You know, you see it every year. It's very rare that, you know, a Cal Ripken on a last place Baltimore Orioles team becomes American League MVP, although he totally deserved it.
keeping that going, we'll make this a little more macro. What's your favorite ACC road trip to make if you you know, you might not be able to this year. What's the favorite road trip?
I've got a few. I like bouncing around. I always go back, you know, the Carolina games are fun. Although I'm not thrilled with where they put the media these days. So we'll take them off that list. Louisville, listen, the KFC Yum Center is awesome. Great facility. They took everything into consideration. You know, from a media point of view, great workspace. The media workroom's adjacent to the post-game coach's interview room. So when you're on deadline, you don't have to dash down a hall, you know, and get lost on your way and run into a forklift and stuff like that. So I'm pulling back the curtain for everybody here who doesn't know what problems we go through on deadline. You know, so, but it's just a great basketball environment. So I love the Yum Center. And there's something to be said for finishing your game story and walking out of the arena there and walking right across the street to one or two of, you know, one of the writers' late, you know, haunts after a game. And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, but down in Kentucky, they got this stuff called bourbon.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. We finally got to the heart of the matter. And so, you know, I like a lot of these places. I'm a college basketball fan. I grew up on college campuses for the most part. And so I love the environment, the atmosphere, the arena. If I do get to into an arena this year, I know that's what I'm going to miss the most. You know, so I look forward to getting back to the Peterson Event Center and seeing the kids in the Oakland Zoo again. I love that trip. You know, getting back, you know, to, you know, even, you know, some of the other places that, you know, in the league that, you know, there's some pretty good road trips here. You know, Atlanta. Atlanta's nice for Georgia Tech, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Where no, they have a varsity to compete with Syracuse's varsity. There's a varsity down there that would claim that they're the best, so.
Okay. Where's the, you know, throughout the ACC, where's your favorite spot to stop for a drink, either the night before a game, the night after a game, when you've got everything in?
Well, as I just mentioned, Louisville, and if you want me to name the place, it's called Trolls.
Okay.
You know, Trolls in Louisville, and the thing is, it's literally right across the street from the arena. And also, there's a bunch of downtown hotels, so, you know, we go straight from Trolls straight to the hotel. We walk the whole way. No one gets in a car. It's really easy. So, yeah, you know, you got to like that. You know, there's a few other places. You know, as a Carolina grad, I know Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. You know, so I'm able to take my colleagues, you know, around and, you know, take them to, like, you know, Top of the Hill is a place that's still there. A few of the places from my undergraduate days, sad to say, are gone. I guess I wasn't around to keep them in business.
Oh, no.
Refocusing a little back from drinking to basketball. What was your, you know, you've seen a lot. What was your favorite Syracuse team to ever cover?
Oh, you know, a lot of them have been fun. You know, with the, you know, the kids on the team, if they're fun, engaging, entertaining, you know, sometimes I'm asked about, you know, oh, that, you know, the season made that NIT, you know, 2008. I'm like, the kids on that 2008 team were awesome. It was Johnny Flynn was a freshman and engaging. Dante Green was hysterical, funny, smart. You know, so I had a lot of fun covering. Yeah, I know they struggled because they had Eric Diefendorf and Andy Routens injured, but you know, Orenze Anawaku was on that team, who's, you know, a bright kid, and you could ask him thoughtful questions and get great answers. So the 2010 team had a bunch of really good guys. Orenze was still around, and by that time, a fifth-year senior. Wes Johnson was an engaging personality. Andy Routens was a fifth-year senior. Great interview, great quote. You know, a kid that just got it. Scoop Jardine was around on that team for a little levity. You know, so, you know, that was pretty fun. And of course, that team won. You know, they lost, I don't know how many games they lost all year. I mean, when you're covering a winning team, you know, you're going into happy locker rooms and guys are more engaged and they're, you know, they're more willing to do the interview. And sometimes it is a struggle to cover a losing team. I've never actually covered a losing team. I've covered a team that had bad years relative, you know, to Syracuse teams of the past. But even those years, I'm going into a winning locker room more often than not. Back in my early part of my career, I covered a minor league baseball team that had a losing record. So I had to go into clubhouse every single day. And, you know, that's when you learn how to navigate a, you know, a locker room or clubhouse is when you're doing it. And, you know, six times out of 10, they just lost, you know, so that can get old over the stretch of 100 and, you know, some odd games. So basketball's a piece of cake, and I've covered a lot of good teams and had a lot of fun with some of them.
All right, Ben wants to stay on the basketball trail. I want to stay on the other trail. Where's the most underrated place to go in Syracuse for a bite to eat? You've got your big names. Is there an underrated spot that you've got in the back pocket?
Oh, God, yeah, a bunch. I like Korean food, so out here where I live in the Camillus area, there's a place called the Noodle House. Love okay. them. Pizza, you know, Twin Trees. I don't know if you guys have ventured off the SU Hill in order to find really good local pizza, but I would recommend Twin Trees. If you like chicken wings, there's Swallows. My old haunt was Kelly's, which sadly closed and it's reopened. And because of the coronavirus, I haven't ventured back to the new place, but I used to love the salt and pepper wings at Kelly's. The garlic wings at the Wildcat out here in Camillus. Up on the north side, the wings at the Change of Pace were actually the first wings I ever had. Okay. When I moved here from Tennessee, the guy covering SU football at the time and another friend of his took me to the Change of Pace, and I had my first ever authentic chicken wing. And, you know, you could hear the angels singing, and the sunbeams came down from the skies. It was like, ah. So, yeah, you know. Shout out to them. But there's a bunch of, you know, the one thing about Syracuse is there's a lot of really good places to eat around town. And as soon as we stop this, I'm going to go, geez, why didn't I mention them? You know, I'm going to have a buddy of mine who runs someplace call me up and go, are you kidding me, Mike? You forgot to mention us?
Yes, we try to ask that to as many people as we can, and we get a different answer every time, which just goes to show how many different spots there are for good food here.
I know, you know, college kids are always, you know, looking to find like a little breakfast, lunch, you know, place that serves breakfast around lunch or even evening time. So for diners, there's Stella's, of course, which is located kind of close to Destiny USA, the mall. And again, out my way, and I hate to even do this because sometimes I don't like seeing my places get overcrowded because I like to be able to get a table rather than wait. But I like Second Chance Diner out here.
All right.
Yeah, well, this is the best time to recommend places you like because now we can support them while we're
and they need your support. Even if you don't dine indoor, you get the takeout. And yes, so
exactly
all those places I named.
One final thing. Will we play
I didn't mention like any like super expensive restaurants.
Okay.
Because I'm on a sports route, you know, the sports writer salary.
Hey, we're not looking for expensive.
All right. So you got your diners, you got your pizza, you got your Vietnamese Korean / food at Noodle House, and you got your wings. And so you're good to go.
Exactly. You can live a lifetime on all of that. Last one, will we play a full college basketball season this year?
No, everybody's going to lose games. So I think the goal is to try to navigate it as best they can, get in as many games as they can between 13 and 20 probably, and get to tournament time. They have to have a tournament. The NCAA and the colleges and the conferences, I don't know if financially some of them will be able to make it if they don't have the NCAA tournament in March. They just got to get there, but you're already seeing games canceled. I think Seton Hall had a game canceled already, and we're 2 weeks away from the start of the season. Yeah. But because they're having to go into quarantines and shutdowns, they already know their openers are done. So
was it Iona with four games?
Four games. Now they're losing four because I think their first three or three of their first four are in a multi-team event. So when you can't get to that multi-team event in time to get their test, and be in quarantine, they missed their first game there. You know, they won't be able to play games two and three. So yeah, Iona is down four games already.
Mike, thank you so much. You've always got the insight. You're always, you know, a pleasure to hear, and I can't wait to try and check a few of those restaurants off of your list there. So I'm sorry if your local hidden gems start to become infiltrated with some college students for a little while as we try those out. Thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Guys, this has been a ton of fun. Thanks for having me on.
One more thank you to Mike Waters for taking the time. We hope we can get him back on a little bit later in the basketball season to talk maybe some tournament stuff or ACC tournament stuff and really look into that even further. But Ben, this is a team with a kind of fun balance of you've got those returning starters, those staples for Syracuse last season, but you've also got a handful of new guys and new contributors that you could see breaching the starting lineup and, you know, being strong contributors for the Syracuse offense and defense.
The big name that everyone wants to talk about is Alan Griffin, the transfer from Illinois. And we talked about it a bit when he transferred over in the summer. He's a massive pickup for the Orange, an immediate impact guy, and someone who, frankly, SU is expecting to get, you know, top two, top three point scoring out of. I think sometimes we forget Buddy Boeheim will probably take a jump if his usage is similar. Joe Girard averaged 12 points a game last season. Who wouldn't be shocked if he was up to 15? But Alan Griffin could be scoring somewhere between 15 to 20 points this year for SU. He was a 41% three-point shooter at Illinois. He's dynamite. And the guy who really has me excited is Kadari Richmond. I think has a lot of people excited. His positional versatility is ridiculous. I mean, Mike mentioned it. You know, he lists as a small forward, but he plays more like a one. He said he could come in and take Boeheim out of games. I even think he could take Griffin out of games. Griffin's the same height as Kadari Richmond and 10 pounds heavier. So, you know, the ability for Richmond to come in one through three, guard those positions in the zone, and be able to either facilitate as the lead ball handler or be a playmaker and scorer off the ball. He's a guy who I expect also to make an immediate impact, just this time as a freshman, not as a transfer.
Yeah, and Richmond is a guy that can provide that length at the top of the zone if he does come in at the guard that you kind of saw Syracuse lack last season, as Joe Girard and Buddy Boeheim are not the fastest individuals that Syracuse has ever had on the court by any stretch of the imagination. But when you compare, you know, Boeheim and Richmond up top, and you've got two 6'5 guys, a 6'5 and a 6'6 guy out there with that length, once again, you can kind of make up for some of the difficulties that Syracuse had last season in terms of the top of the 2-3 zone. And it's a fun little situation to be able to have that versatility. And then when the guy like Alan Griffin, he talked about how there is this, you know, this aura around him about how good of a shooter he is and how much he is going to be able to do behind the arc this season. But he was talking about how valuable that is in terms of people being able to discover that he can get to the rim and he can be a really strong asset for the Orange going to the hoop and getting some points inside the arc. So that's something that I'm looking forward to in terms of, because when you've got a guy who, you know, coming into the season shot 40% from three off the bench last season and then transfers to Syracuse, you've got the 3-point shooting. You got to guard the arc, and he can put that ball on the floor, get right past you and get to the rack, or be able to distribute really well, which is something that I'm really, really looking forward to see how he can translate his game as he makes this switch. And you kind of, we didn't really get to it after the episode here. We talked about it a little bit with Mike, but you're a big Quincy Garia guy, and it's going to be interesting to see how he can contribute and how he will be able to make that jump, as we presume he's now 100%, and we didn't see him 100% last season. So I'll be interested to see how he can make that jump in 2020-2021.
Yeah, there's no, you know, it's no secret that I like Quincy Garia, because we may or may not be from the same country, but I think he's got a lot to offer. I think he's the best rebounder on this team. You know, he and Sidibe could go back and forth for that, but, you know, Sidibe's averaging 7 rebounds last year with more minutes and under the basket. Quincy Garia is doing it from the wing, averaging 5 in 20 minutes. That's pretty impressive. He has a big role on this team, I think. Mike said Swiss Army knife, and I see that, you know, how Kadari Richmond is to the bottom half of the rotation for the 1-3. Garia is kind of to the 3-5. He doesn't actually play the 5, but he can slot in at the 3, he can slot in at the 4, and give Syracuse different options up at center. if SU wants to rebound better than it did last season, they need to play him. They were seventh in the conference in rebounding, which isn't bad, but they actually were better on the offensive side. They kind of struggled a little on their own defensive glass. So I think he'll be much more polished, I think, offensively after a year. You know, it was a little hectic. He was kind of bowling his way towards the basket, but it's going to be a big improvement, I think, and a much larger role for Quincy going forward.
We are inching closer to the Syracuse basketball season opener against Bryant the day after Thanksgiving. We've got the countdown going over at our Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod, bringing you down through these last 2 weeks as we await some relief in Central New York. We can look away from the Syracuse football team for some time, talk some Syracuse basketball, watch some Syracuse basketball, and watch a team that has some expectations and can perform this season. So we're 14 days away now. The countdown will continue at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Follow us over there for the countdown, for some more polls, for our thoughts on anything Syracuse basketball, football, or lacrosse. And, you know, subscribe to the podcast. We would really appreciate that. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can subscribe to us there. Leave us a 5-star rating. Leave us a review. We would greatly appreciate that. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week.